Hey, what's up? So I did some episodes of this podcast about travel stuff. I did one about walking home at night on the outskirts of Tokyo, and I did one about hiking up a mountain in Fukuoka, and I got one I'm working on about visiting the Netherlands, which is not finished yet. And I realized, like, I like doing these travel podcasts. This is very nice. And now that I'm finally out of lockdown in my hometown and I'm traveling again, right now as we speak, I'm on Jeju Island in South Korea. I'm at the top of a waterfall with a fence. You know, I'm not gonna like do a Lara Croft dive off the waterfall. But yeah, I realized, man, I like these travel episodes. When I'm traveling again, maybe I should do a travel podcast. And I thought I'd just test it out, see how it goes, and it's not at all like these XO episodes where I just put out one once in a blue moon. Instead, once I got to Japan, I was like, I'll just record whenever the inspiration takes me. And that turned out to be every fucking day. Every day. I was there for the whole 90-day visa, and I recorded a podcast almost every day. And now that I'm here in South Korea, I slowed down a bit because I had never been here before. And I had to get my footing a bit, figure out what's going on. But now that I'm more comfortable here, I'm pumping out the podcast here too. So if that sounds like something that might be interesting to you, you know, it is just like slice of life. It really is just whatever was going on that day. So it's not necessarily cold, hard travel information. I mean, there's some of that just happens inadvertently. It's way more about the vibe. Just the vibe of a guy traveling around, specifically in Japan right now. And then the podcast will eventually get to South Korea. But if that sounds cool, I called it Roaming Holiday. It was my friend's idea, like Roman Holiday, but roaming. So if you search Roaming Holiday, Keith McNally, it'll pop up wherever. Or head to keithcourage.com and I have a link right there for how to get the podcast. But generally, I just record whatever is happening on the day. But I was just editing an episode where this one's a bit unusual, where after about a month and a half in Japan, I finally took a fucking day off. It was like too much adventure. I was just like every single day going out and doing stuff. I finally took a day off and that gave me a chance to reflect a little bit. So I just started talking about this Sega building in Ikebukuro in Tokyo. And how it reminded me of having a Sega as a kid. And I was listening back to this, and I'm like, man, this episode's almost like an XO episode, you know? It's got stuff about Japan and about reminiscing about childhood and about my dad buying me a Sega. And it just ties in all these little ways to stuff I've talked about on XO. So this isn't really representative of what Roaming Holiday is like. This is a bit of an outlier episode. But I thought I would just take this. It's not even the whole episode, it's just this one part where I talk about Sega. And I was like, let me just put that on the XO feed just to let people know I'm doing this other podcast, and it just seems appropriate, it seems to fit. So I hope you find this interesting. This is me in Fukuoka, Japan, talking about Sega. And yeah, if this seems like something you'd be into, Roaming Holiday. I am pumping these bad boys out. There are a bunch of episodes of this podcast, So without further ado, since it's about Sega, let's play a little Sega music. Remember that game Columns? It was like Sega's bad version of Tetris, but it had really good music. Let's play some Columns music and then slip into the story about Sega. Ooh, I'm definitely getting my wish. I remember when I was in Japan in the summer in 2019 and all the drink machines had cold drinks and I was like, it'd be so cool to get the hot drink, you know? I can't wait to come here when it's cold and get the hot drinks. So it's, I don't know, it's about 10 o'clock at night. It's pretty chilly today, so I just got a cocoa, a hot cocoa. Van Houten cocoa. From Asahi. Out of the machine, and you know, I got something without caffeine since it's late. It's like, oh, I can drink this, still go to bed. But I might not drink it at all. I might just toss it in the fridge when I get back and have it tomorrow morning. But yeah, I just got it to hold a warm can in my hand, and it's very nice. Feels very good. So today, I finally took a day off. I've had some other days where I mostly took a day off, but then I still am like, oh, the last moment, you know, when I've only got 3 hours of sunlight left, it's like, oh, I should really just run out and real quick go up a mountain or something. Today I actually did stay in all day, although I guess I'm outside now. Now I'm out, but I don't think I'll be walking around too long. Just my head feels stuffy and weird if I'm inside all day. But yeah, in the spirit of taking a day off and just kind of catching up a bit on stuff, just this is just, you know, whatever little anecdote that barely has anything to do with Japan. It's just something I've been meaning to yammer about since I went to Ikebukuro. And I just keep pushing it back and pushing it back. It's like, oh, I'll just mention that next episode. But there's just always other stuff happening. And then my rambling podcast, you know, it may be just rambling, but there does always come a point where it's like, okay, that's the logical end of what happened to me today. Can't just break out another random story all of a sudden for no reason. That'd be weird. So I've just been putting this off the whole time. So let's yammer it out today on the day off. In a nice chilly evening, walking around the last day of November. Yeah, even that's appropriate, I guess. It's about to be December in about an hour. And this has Christmas connotations. So there is the video game company Sega, which nowadays is just, they just make games. But back in the day, they were trying to be a competitor with Nintendo as far as making actual consoles and systems go. So as a kid, I obviously wanted a Nintendo Entertainment System, as everyone did, and they were right too. It was a fucking incredible system with just some games that to this day are amazing. Like, the stuff they pulled off with that hardware is nuts. I mean, there's a lot of bad games too, but why focus on them? Focus on the good ones and your mind will be blown. Bionic Commando, River City Ransom, you know, and then there's all the, you know, Mario, Mega Man, etc., etc., but it's just so much stuff. So my mom didn't want us to have video games, and I can't really blame her because I always had a bad temper with video games, and I more or less got that under control as an adult. Now, luckily, even though my mom, if she had her druthers, there would be no Nintendos, luckily my dad also wanted a Nintendo, so that was handy. But it was such a big ticket item that our little town of Fredericton, New Brunswick, small city, was sold out. There were none available that Christmas season. Shades of the Wii later on, you know, just like, ah, geez, trying to get this thing. It's not enough to go around. And my dad had this genius plan, because we had before, we had rented a Nintendo for like a week once, and a bunch of games. So his genius plan was he was going to buy a Nintendo, but just tell us that he rented it. And that would have been fine. That would have been more than enough of a Christmas present. Like, cool, we get to rent a Nintendo again. Like, hey, I'll take it, man. Hook it up to my veins. And then when the week was up, that's when he was going to tell us, like, guess what? Second Christmas a week later, I actually bought this thing. We get to keep it forever. Whoa! And it would have been a pretty amazing moment. But yeah, his plan was foiled. So instead, he got us a Sega Master System, which at this point, I don't know, was it 1987, I'm gonna say, maybe? It was already very clear that Sega was not winning this battle. You know, they had like 5% of the market or something. Truthfully, it's hard to call myself like a big Sega kid. I do think of it that way, but it was only because we had no other choice, you know? Sega was all that was available, so we got a Sega. But once we had the Sega was awesome. The Sega was great. It's a way shorter list on that system. There's like Wonder Boy 3, Phantasy Star, and I could have swore I had like a third go-to game that still kind of holds up. But now I don't know what it might have been. Jesus, is it really just those two? Anyway, it was way more like arcade-type games. Sega had a lot of arcade games. You could get versions of them on the Sega. And it was kind of extra cool because we were just kids. Our taste wasn't necessarily that good. And Sega was already kind of on the outs to the point that it was more popular in Canada than it was in America. And I think the same held true in Europe and especially Brazil. But you could find Sega games on clearance, Sega Master System games, for literally like $5, you know? Every once in a while, my dad would come home with a stack of new Sega games, like an actual stack. Like, here's like 7 or 8 new games, where if we had had a Nintendo and each one of those things was like $50, that's not gonna fucking happen, you know? And then you go through the stack and you're like, oh, this is some pretty dubious material. But it's not like the Atari 2600, where it had actual, just trash games. All these Sega games were perfectly cromulent games. They were totally worth $5 to $10, you know? But the true power of Nintendo is the reason I know that story of what Dad was gonna do. He couldn't resist telling us. He's like, so you guys good with this? You cool with the Sega? And we were like, fuck yeah, we're cool with the Sega. This is fine. And he's like, yeah, okay, cool, but let me tell you my plan. This is what I was gonna do. And he told us the Nintendo plan. And we're like, oh yeah, that would have been pretty sweet. And then I do remember asking, I really tried to word this as delicately as I could for like a 9-year-old. But I was like, yeah, you know, very happy to have the Sega. This is amazing. Everything is wonderful. But do you think at some point we could still rent a Nintendo, you know? I mean, Nintendo's still Nintendo, you know? Because there was just like, Nintendo was moving away from the arcade style and to the home style, just their games being more elaborate and deeper, and you could play them for longer. The Sega was technically a better system. The graphics are better, blah, 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 blah. But the depth of experience on the Nintendo was clearly deeper. So yeah, I think that is when Dad thought, like, okay, I see where this is going. We're just going to end up buying a Nintendo at some point. And we did. So eventually we had a Sega and a Nintendo. But because we started with Sega, I always had an extreme soft spot for Sega. And when the Sega Genesis came out and Sega was actually a competitor for a while, we got one of those. And then we never did get a Saturn. Never even saw one until I came to Japan. But then my brother did buy a Dreamcast, and then sadly Sega stopped making systems at that point. But yeah, Sega, man, when I think back to my childhood, I always think of Sega first now. When I just think of that feeling of sitting in your living room as a little kid, oblivious to the worries and stresses of your parents, just thinking it's all good, here we are. Nice, happy, good old family. Everything's going well. And I'm playing Sega. Or like if I'd wake up later at night, come downstairs for a glass of water or whatever, my dad and his friend would be beers around, smoking, playing golf or baseball on the Sega. So even they got into the Sega. Oh, I'm at the little outdoor shrine that I found the first night I was here. I've never walked by here in the daytime. How weird. I can only come here at night. So, yeah, so Shinto shrine and Buddhist temple. And this is definitely Buddhist because these statues, at least 3 of them, are of the Buddha. So I guess that makes this a Buddhist temple. But it's very tiny. It seems strange to refer to something this small as a temple. To me, a shrine feels like it could be little. A shrine could be any size, right? I don't know, I still just can never figure out what I'm talking about. I can never get these things straight. But let's pay our respects in some way that is probably disrespectful, since again, I don't understand what I'm doing. Quietly, so as not to bother the neighborhood. But yeah, then later on, I met one of my really good friends, this guy Terry. I met him because I was talking about Sega at school, in the school library, because he was a year ahead of me. And our school was kind of split into the English and French halves. I was in the French half. So I doubt I would have met him at all. But he was like, "You got a Sega? Holy shit, fuck, I got a Sega." So we started trading Sega games and we were friends for years. Now it's more like I see him on Facebook. Sadly, I haven't really hung out with him in some time. But technically, we're still friends. And then through him, I met my friend Ray, who just texted me today. Like, "Hey, man, what are you up to? What's going on?" And yeah, I met a bunch of people through having a Sega, because it was more common in Canada. So I knew several people, because I know a lot of American people. You know, they're like, "I didn't know anybody with a Sega." Or there'd be like that one kid in the neighborhood who had a Sega. It was kind of the reverse for us. It's like I had to go out of my way up into the fancy suburbs to play my friend's Nintendos. For some reason, in my neighborhood, everybody had Sega. So yeah, Sega holds a very special place in my heart, even though if you play Sega and Nintendo side by side, Nintendo obviously wins by a landslide. But I like that I got that experience, you know? It's like I got to get both experiences. I still played all the Nintendo games. I'm still very familiar with all that stuff. But there's like an extra layer. It's like a marbling on a roast or something. It's like I also know this Sega stuff that is just cool to know and just feels a little more personal. But yeah, Sega faded pretty quickly. And then just arcades in general faded in North America. So it was quite a fucking sight to me to arrive in Japan. And my first Airbnb was at Naka Itabashi, four stops from Ikebukuro. And Ikebukuro, the first thing I did was I got off the train there on the west side, just randomly. And there's not as much going on the west side, but it had the Taito arcade. And I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool. Good old Taito, Space Invaders. Can't go wrong with that." So that was pretty neat. But then eventually I realized, like, okay, Ikebukuro is split down the middle. And the east side is where the big stuff is. And I walked down the street and I saw the Sega arcade and just that logo, that super duper famous Sega logo. I mean, famous to me. I mean, I think it's sort of famous, but in my life, it's huge, you know? And it was such a crazy feeling because the Sega arcade building was like the whole block. So fucking huge. Just this giant Sega sign that takes up like half the block. I mean, maybe it wasn't that big. It's fucking big though. And it was so insane because I was like, man, here is a representation of Sega that in real life is as big and prominent and notable and important as Sega was to me. And I'd never seen that in North America. Not even a slight hint of that in North America. It's the kind of thing you think you would never see. It's like from a dream. It's like, what the fuck is this? This is like some alternate reality where Sega won for some reason instead of Nintendo. Which, don't get me wrong, I don't think that should have happened. I think we're probably better off with Nintendo. But it's still a wild thing to see. Of just like, wow, I'm in a different world. It's like that Christmas when we got our Sega as a runner-up prize, but then learned to love it, you know? Learned to gain great fondness for Sega. This was like, what if that was the main event? It's like, what if that Sega we got was because Sega was the best? And then decades later, this is the result, is that there's buildings, Sega buildings, that fucking blot out the sky. They're so fucking big, you know? And then there was another Sega building that was less wide, more tall in Akihabara. And, you know, that was the second one I saw, so it wasn't as insane. And I guess I was aware of that one. I'd seen video of that one before. The Ikebukuro one double got me because not only was I really there seeing it in real life, I didn't even know what Ikebukuro was. I didn't realize it was such a prominent neighborhood. I didn't realize I would come to like it so much. You know, to me, it's kind of better than Akihabara. It's kind of better than Shibuya and Shinjuku. It's not quite crazy sized, but it's still got all the stuff you could ever want, including a gigantic Sega building. So, like, I didn't even know it was coming. I just am walking down the street, and bam, you know? So it was one of those things I got to tell my dad when I came back from Japan. It's like, man, you remember Sega, of course. And he's like, yeah, of course. Because my dad, you know, he used to do stuff too. They had like an arcade joystick for the Sega. Semi like an arcade. It wasn't really like an arcade joystick, but, you know, as opposed to the control pad that you just hold in your hands. But this thing, it was a little bit small. The base of it was kind of small. So my dad got clamps, and he clamped this thing to the table so he could play games like it was an arcade machine, because that's what he was more familiar with. Incidentally, it's also no mystery where my bad temper with video games came from, because when we did rent that Nintendo, there's this game Gunsmoke, this Capcom game that's pretty good. It's like a top view shooter game, except it's got a Wild West theme, so instead of being like a spaceship or a World War II fucking fighter, you're just a top view of a little guy with his two guns. But it's cool because you could shoot forward or diagonally to the left and right. But you had to find a wanted poster or the level would just loop forever. And I don't know why, my dad found a bunch of the wanted posters in the later levels. He could never find the one in the first level. It's just in like a barrel or something. But he just could never find it, and the level would just keep looping and looping. And man, he got so mad at that game. So that's where I got it from for sure. But anyway, I was like, you remember Sega, of course. And we reminisced about Sega a little. And I was like, yeah, like there's this fucking arcade, you know, and inside it's not like it's all just Sega games. Inside it's claw machines on one floor and photo booth on another floor and rhythm games on another floor, whatever. The actual Sega involvement as far as stuff on the inside was minimal. But I was like, yeah, it's just this gigantic building. And it showed him the picture, like bigger than anything we have here, bigger than anything that makes any kind of sense. And it says Sega on it. That's another side memory. There was this great big arcade. There's this huge mall called Metro Town in Burnaby, the city next to Vancouver. It's all connected to Vancouver. There was this huge arcade there when I first moved there. And I tried to take my dad there when he, you know, it was literally, I don't know, 3 or 4 months later he came to visit. And I was like, oh, let me take you to the big arcade, because he would always take me and my brother to the arcade when we were little and give us each like a whole roll of quarters, which, you know, I know now as an adult, what's a roll of quarters, 10 bucks? But that was fucking crazy to me as a kid. It's like, what could be better than that? You go to the arcade, a whole roll of quarters. And arcades in the 80s and early 90s, it was this time that can never exist again, where for a quarter, for the price of a fucking quarter, you could literally see the future. You could play games that it's like, this is what games are gonna be like in 2 or 3 years at home, but you get to play it now, you know? It's a fucking insane feeling. But yeah, I tried to take him to this arcade in Metro Town, and it fucking closed. It had just closed. I only got to go one time. Like, arcades are just, they just fucking evaporated in North America. Now there's like weird barcades and stuff. At least there's something. But anyway, that was by far the most, because I don't know, I didn't really know what else I could tell him about Japan. He doesn't like sushi. He doesn't know anything about Japan. He doesn't care about like anime and shit. I don't know. But I could tell him about the Sega building, and it's like, holy crap, that was real, that building? And I was like, it sure was. Anyway, the Sega building is no longer the Sega building. But it's not as sad as it sounds. at first I was like, oh man, like at least I got to see it. At least I got to have that experience. Because yeah, all these temples and shrines and stuff, the Sega building, that was it to me, you know? That was like, holy shit. It's like I traveled to Mecca, but I didn't even know that's what I was doing. I didn't even know it was here. It's like I found my weird North Star by accident. This thing that was super relevant to my life and my past. And just in this other country, to some degree, even if it is just a building full of claw machines mostly. It's like, wow, over here, this is also relevant. Like, what a fucking cool feeling. Sega's a weird company, too. It was actually founded by an American. Sega means service games. They just fixed arcade machines and stuff. And then it was bought out by Japan. So yeah, I heard that the Sega building was closing. And it was, you know, partially COVID. Obviously, COVID messed up Japan pretty bad, where a lot harder to justify a gigantic fucking building that takes up a whole block. And the YouTube channel Tokyo Lens, this Canadian guy named Norm, who's lived in Japan for a long time, he did a whole, like, documentary about it on, like, the day that they closed it. He interviewed a bunch of people and stuff. But what's kind of interesting is, I mean, I don't actually know the full details of what went on, and but it turns out it just seems like it's more kind of generic businessy stuff. It's not really as calamitous as it sounds, because the Sega stuff is still there. Like, the Sega building in Ikebukuro, I'm not sure that it's in the exact same spot. It seems like the majority of the stuff is across the street. But it's still, like, at least three floors of stuff, just all kinds of crap. I think that main Sega building is something else. I'm not sure. But in Akihabara, apparently it's similar. And I see them all over the place. Now it's called GIGO. G-I-G-O. Which stands for Get Into the Gaming Oasis. So just on a surface level, you know, someone else is running it now. And it just doesn't have that impact of, like, that Sega logo, you know, like that. But that's the thing, is, like, I don't know how, like, who from Sega was running it. What connection could they possibly have had to the Sega of the mid-80s? Maybe none, I don't know, you know. Business-wise, like, whatever, who cares? Like, what does it matter what the logo is? Basically, these places are still there. Nothing really was lost. Nothing really has changed. Just the logo. So in the end, it's really not that sad of a story, because when I heard the Sega building was going, it's like, oh, that sucks. Maybe Japan is also pulling the plug on these great big super mega arcades. But they aren't. They're still all over the place. I bump into them everywhere that I go. And I did get to see the giant Sega logo looming in the sky, big enough to crush us all. I did get to see it while, you know, it was like, that was like the last chance, because like lockdown happened almost exactly after I left. It was like really 4 months later or something. So that was pretty literally the last chance to see the Sega building, and I got here just in time. So, I mean, I'd call that kind of a happy story. And obviously it came to mind when I was in Ikebukuro and I walked by the GIGO building. At the time I was like, too, like, I'm gonna have to look this up. I don't remember for the fucking life of me what GIGO stands for. And then I think I saw it on one of there, because they're all over the place. There's a bunch of these GIGO places. And then on one of them, I saw the smaller writing, Get Into the Gaming Oasis. So, I mean, to me, GIGO is less cool than Sega. But GIGO and Sega are both just two-syllable nonsense words. And Get Into the Gaming Oasis may not be that cool, but service and games is not that cool either. You know? It's only cool to me. But it is cool to me, and it was cool to me to see it. And I was happy to find out that reports of the Sega building's demise were greatly exaggerated. It just regenerated as GIGO, and they're still all over the place. So, I just walked to a dead end and back, I think it might be time to pull out the phone and figure out how to actually get home. Still 45 minutes before it becomes December. And yeah, it doesn't even seem that cold anymore. It was probably just because I'm walking around and I got used to it. But yeah, it still seems pretty nice. So there we go, there's the Sega story. And you know, I recorded that in Fukuoka. You might recall that I did a whole XO episode about hiking up the mountain in Fukuoka. So I went back to that mountain, and I hiked up it a bunch more times, and I found an observation deck above the previous observation deck that I'd found that's higher up in the mountain, and the view is just absolutely fucking incredible. And I know it's a bit weird to listen to something like that as audio, you know, why are you listening to the audio of someone describing the view from a mountain? But I think it's kind of cool because, like, in that case specifically, I was recording when I found it. I was walking down this mountain path and I was just like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck? How did I never know this was here? So you get to hear me, like, find it in real time. Because, you know, I'll level with you. This travel podcast, Roaming Holiday, there's some parts that it's just like, I'm listening back and I'm like, well, this is a pretty pedestrian observation. Or like, what are you talking about right now? You know, it's not all super fascinating. But I think the totality of it, the overall project, is really neat and I think is a little different than what you might normally find. And stuff like that, like there's moments like that where just crazy stuff happens and I'm just like, what the hell? How is this possible? Or fast forwarding to South Korea. There's this place, Bukhansan National Park, where it's like these just mountains that it looks like you're in the Alps, these crazy huge mountains. And then there's temples up in the mountains that have wild dogs that just live there. They just live up in the mountains, but they seem pretty nice and they just hang out. And like you're up, like you start the day on the subway, you get off the subway, and the next thing you know, an hour later, you're hiking up this honest to God mountain. And then there's snow. And there's wild dogs, and everyone is just living there together, and it feels like you're in some version of a VR thing that, like, the wires got crossed. Like, how is this all happening? This is fucking crazy. What's going on? So, yeah, like I said, I mean, some of it's boring, but some of it is amazing. Just incredible stuff. Anyway, I hope you'll check it out. Roaming Holiday by Keith McNally. KeithCourage.com has the link. And yeah, still working on this episode about Amsterdam. That should be up next, so stay tuned. Let's finish off with one more Sega song. Let's do Phantasy Star. Phantasy Star has some good music, a little more upbeat than Columns. That was Wonder Boy 3, by the way, that I played before. Now some Phantasy Star. All right, thank you for listening. See you next time.